It's Friday, October 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Coming up, the United States warns Russia about its military intervention in Syria. Afghan forces say they recaptured a key city.
We have ships that are extremely capable of ballistic missile defense.
The United States makes a strategic move in its so-called pivot to Asia. Also ahead, holiday toys debut and country music honoring women. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter has called Russia's military intervention in Syria, purportedly to target the Islamic State, a logical contradiction in Moscow's policy, and he warned Wednesday it will only inflame the nearly five-year-long conflict. Carter said the United States is prepared to meet right away with Russia to ensure their separate air operations over Syria do not result in what he called inadvertent incidents. U.S. defense officials say Russian aircraft struck targets near the western city of Homs, and Carter said the operation involved places where, in fact, the IS group is not present. Russian President Vladimir Putin said the strikes had come at the formal request of Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad. Mr. Putin said Russia will support the Syrian army only in its legitimate fight, specifically against terrorist groups. Syria analyst David Lesh of Trinity University in Texas told VOA's Victor Beatty Moscow has clearly taken the initiative in Syria.
Vladimir Putin is emphatically saying to anyone, particularly those countries that are back in the opposition, the Syrian opposition, that Russia is not going to let the Syrian regime collapse. So if any of these countries want to continue to back opposition groups, whether they be Jabhat al-Nusra, ISIS, or legitimate Syrian opposition, you better ante up and be prepared to be in it for the long haul. Otherwise, shift your efforts to bring an end to the conflict by backing the Syrian government, which, you know, would put everyone from the Russian point of view in a better position to take on the Islamic State and, you know, possibly ameliorate the refugee problem. Secondly, I think it's an attempt to secure Russian long-held strategic interests in Syria and, importantly, secure a seat at the diplomatic table in any sort of political process that may develop regarding a negotiated settlement. And Putin wants to make Russia an indispensable partner in the future of Syria, which would enable Moscow to secure and even improve its strategic position in the region.
According to media reports, perhaps as many as 36 people, maybe more, were killed in the Russian airstrikes. The Defense Secretary, Ashton Carter, suggested at his news briefing on Wednesday the Russian targets apparently were non-Islamic State.
Russians are adopting the definition of terrorists that the Syrian regime has long taken. That is, anyone who's fighting the Syrian regime are terrorists. I think although the Russians would like everyone to think they're attacking the Islamic State, they know that in the immediate term, the biggest threat to the Syrian regime, and therefore the biggest threat to Russian interests, are the reconstituted Syrian opposition groups, particularly a group called Jaish al-Fateh, or the Army of Conquest, which has experienced a number of victories against Syrian government forces over the last 6 months. And that's why they're hitting north of Homs, because that's where some of their forces are located.
Is the United States just going to allow the Russians to take the initiative in Syria?
Well, I think the U.S. can't really do anything about it right now. So, you know, for now, it's cautiously going along for the ride to see where this may go, particularly in terms of if it energizes or generates another attempt at diplomacy to reach a political settlement. I think we're hoping that the Russians are acting in, you know, less in self-interested strategic reasons in the short term and are thinking about the long term and holding the Russians to their word that, you know, when they say they want a negotiated solution and they want Bashar al-Assad to make the necessary reforms and that Syria has to be a different country in the future. Yeah, I think we're going to let them see if they can bring this about, because certainly no one else can. And so right now, I think the U.S. is staying on the sidelines, even though some U.S. officials, I think, are kind of like, fine, go ahead, Russians, try to do what you can, but you're going to get caught up in this quagmire that we've been avoiding all this time, and we'll be laughing in the end.
Lesh says Russian military action will do nothing to advance a political solution in Syria as long as it is targeting legitimate opposition groups. He says Moscow may use its military force to force the opposition to conclude that it has no chance of winning militarily and must come to the negotiating table. Well, we check now online to see what the reactions are to what's happening in Syria. International Edition's social media correspondent is G. Abby Lee, and she's right here in Studio 22 to bring us the latest. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim.
Gee, we went over the differing views on the situation between the United States and Russia on Twitter yesterday. Mm-hmm. Is this still the case?
Unfortunately, yes. Like we just heard, many academics and reporters say the two countries are not on the same page when it comes to fighting the ISIL in Syria, or rather the ISIL or the Syrian government. And this is what Pentagon Press Secretary Peter Cook told reporters Thursday, according to one tweet. We're going to continue to encourage the Russians to take steps to target ISIS, another name for the Islamic State, going forward. Press Secretary Cook is on Twitter at Pentagon Press Sec, but he didn't tweet about the airstrikes himself Thursday.
Well, that's pretty interesting. What about from the Russian side?
Well, it looks like the Russian government didn't change its stance in that they're targeting quote-unquote terrorists. But like the analyst explained earlier, Russia and Syria's idea of terrorists differs significantly from that of the states. Now, this is what the Russian state-run television RT tweeted, quoting Syrian foreign minister. Russia's airstrikes do not target civilians or moderate opposition in Syria. Now, the key word there is moderate. And, Jim, it's quite interesting they had to tweet that because you know what they say about strong denials.
Exactly. Gee, the situation in Syria is also causing quite a stir in U.S. politics as well. Can you give us an example?
Sure. Some presidential hopefuls from the Republican side are vocally against taking in more Syrian refugees, and billionaire Donald Trump is one of them. Fox News made a meme out of his quote, and the quote is quite popular on Twitter. It reads like this. I am putting the people on notice that are coming here from Syria as part of this mass migration, that if I win, that means if he becomes a president, they are going back. And it's not surprising coming from someone who wants to put up a wall between Mexico and the United States. That's all for me today.
Well, that's quite a bit from you, G. Thanks so much. And if you want more, follow our social media guru, G. Abby Lee, on Twitter. And you can find her at G. Abby Lee. Our VOA International Edition account is also there on Twitter. We are at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani says his forces have retaken the northern city of Kunduz from the Taliban. Ayaz Ghul reports from VOA's South Asia Bureau in neighboring Pakistan.
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani told a nationally televised news conference late Thursday an overnight counteroffensive by Afghan forces drove the Taliban out of Kunduz, and efforts are underway to restore complete normalcy to the northern city. Ghani said residents of Kunduz and the people of Afghanistan began their day with the good news their security forces had successfully accomplished the mission and recaptured the city. Hopefully, he added, it must have removed doubts about the ability and capacity of Afghan national forces. The president said, fortunately, security forces did not suffer any fatalities but inflicted heavy casualties on the enemy during clearing operations. Ghani added the government has set up two commissions to investigate what led to the fall of Kunduz and to compensate civilians who suffered during the siege of the city. Local media reported clashes between Taliban insurgents and Afghan security forces in and around Kunduz late Thursday. A Taliban spokesman said militants retreated from parts of the city so they could encircle Afghan forces. The short-lived Taliban control of the northern city was the first time the Islamist insurgency overran a major urban center since it was ousted from power in 2001. The battleground setback has raised questions about preparedness of Afghan security forces and prompted demands for President Ghani to step down for losing control of a provincial capital to the Taliban. A NATO military coalition spokesman told VOA, American special forces advising and assisting Afghan troops in the Kunduz battle encountered an insurgent threat Thursday and returned fire in self-defense to eliminate the threat. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Islamabad.
The United States implemented a key element of its strategic shift toward Asia Thursday with the arrival in Japan of the Navy's nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, the USS Ronald Reagan. In addition to projecting American power in Asia, VOA's Brian Patton reports the U.S. warship's forward deployment is a show of support for Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's controversial efforts to expand the Japanese military's role in the region.
The USS Ronald Reagan arrived at the U.S. naval base in Yokosuka Thursday. In replacing the USS George Washington, it becomes a key part of Washington's Asia pivot, focusing military and diplomatic assets on a region of increasing strategic importance.
We have ships that are extremely capable, ballistic missile defense, especially in this region of the world, with right across the ocean from North Korea.
Many of the ship's 5,000 crew members have been at sea for months after reaching port. Seaman Emmanuel Taylor met his newborn daughter for the first time.
I'm so happy. Words can't even express right now.
The USS Ronald Reagan's arrival coincides with Japan's passage of new security measures that should make it easier for its military to act in defense of its interests and its allies. However, it has highlighted the country's continuing strong pacifist opposition, as well as concerns from Japan's neighbors that Tokyo is returning to its militaristic past. U.S. Navy Secretary Ray Mabus came to Japan with the USS Ronald Reagan in part to show U.S. support for a more assertive Japan to help deter common adversaries like China and North Korea.
We think that these new measures will deepen that, will strengthen that, and will make us better together.
Analysts say for Japan to be more than a junior partner to the U.S., it must commit to more intensive military training, significantly increase its defense budget, and take the lead on potentially dangerous missions. Brian Patton, VOA News, Yokosuka.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
Okay, I know it's the beginning of October and the Christmas holiday season is 3 months away, but it is time to start thinking about toys, believe it or not. An independent toy reviewer has checked out the hot new items and many classic bestsellers, which have been updated for Christmas 2015. VOA's Bernard Schussman reports from the Toys, Tots, Pets, and More show in New York.
They danced. They rolled in from outer space. They mount horses. They raced around the track. And they flew overhead. These are considered among the favorites for success this Christmas toy season. Jim Silver is CEO of TTPM, which analyzes the prospects from various toy makers.
We see a toy from birth, until we have final production. And we test everything. We take everything out of the box. We look at the assembly. We see if it's tough to put together. Then we see, does it play the way it's supposed to play? We get a lot of toys, and they're better than we originally thought. We get a lot of toys that don't meet expectations.
A top seller is expected to be the Star Wars The Force Awakens line. With the new Star Wars movie being released at Christmas, Hasbro expects more than $1 billion in sales. At number one, the BBD droid, a remote-controlled, extraordinarily engineered addition to the Star Wars toy line.
It's pretty amazing. You know, we've never really seen anything like this before. The fact that his head stays stationary on top of this rolling sphere is just a really cool evolution in robotics.
This will be one of the biggest toy years in a decade, according to Silver, because of Star Wars and because of this toy, the drone. It's an indoor-outdoor toy with protection built in for indoor landings. It is not for commercial use.
They are selling like hotcakes off the shelves. We think that we're getting a lot of sort of even older 18 to 34-year-old enthusiasts that are now excited. They wanted to enter the drone market.
Snoopy, of Peanuts cartoon fame, has been updated and given an opportunity to perform. His caretaker, Hannah Guy, likes her little partner very much.
I've been dancing with him all morning, and I think that kids are going to love it as well.
Barbie, which had some hard times in recent sales years, took on a new, fresh character, Equestrian Barbie. It is predicted to be a big hit with young girls.
It gives girls that wow moment, and girls love horses, girls love Barbie, so it gives them that really fun, interactive play with her.
The 2015 toy season is expected to yield billions of dollars in sales, with consumers from childhood to adulthood. And what toy show could take place without the old, reliable Lionel train set under the tree? Not flashy, maybe not as exciting as some, but fun, nevertheless, for kids of all ages. Bernard Chessman, VOA News, New York.
And check out some of those toys if you want to see them visually online at our website, voanews.com. Well, New York City is also the site of a special country music concert to honor women. VOA's Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong joins International Edition host Sarah Williams to preview the event.
Well, Nikki, there's some big plans coming up involving women in country music. You've got three stars, Martina McBride, Cassidy Pope, and Ray Lynn,
yes, are
all getting together to celebrate women in country music.
Yes, this is a great event. It's presented by Pandora. It's called Pandora Presents Women in Country Music. And it's really to celebrate women in country and amplify their power and their reach. Also, this event, which occurs in New York, October 14th, is also to help benefit the T.J. Martell Foundation and its breast cancer research.
Very important for women.
Exactly. And even it's important on two levels, because there was this whole controversy called Tomato Gate, in which a radio consultant, very influential, said that women in country music are like garnishes. They're like tomatoes in a salad. They aren't the meat and potatoes of country. And there was a big outcry against that, because so many women have contributed so much to country music. And if you're having a consultant say that and influencing what people are playing, then it's dangerous for women artists. They're not perceived as valuable. They're not going to get as much support, as much promotion. They may not get the best songwriters. And so a lot of artists have spoken out about that. And Pandora is standing up, which I think is interesting, because he was a radio consultant for terrestrial radio, as we call it, or regular radio, commercial radio. And here is a streaming service that's saying, you know what, these women stream very high, have high streaming rates on Pandora, and we're going to stand up with them, not just to celebrate women in country music, but at the same time use it as a means to help women who are struggling with breast cancer.
And I think it's interesting this is taking place in New York, not, say, in Nashville.
Yes, that is interesting. I think that has to do with Pandora.
Okay.
Not so much about the women, but Pandora.
But still, there are people not just in throughout this country, but around the world that just love country music.
Exactly. I mean, New York has its own country music station, so it's not like it's being misplaced per se, but it's going to be an awesome, it's an exciting event, and I'm happy that it's happening.
Tell me about the artist performing.
Okay, well, you have Martina McBride. And this is interesting because Martina, out of the three women, she's the established heavy-hitting veteran. So she's the multiple award winner. She's the head of the pack. And then you have Cassidy Pope, who's an artist on the rise. She's a star on the rise. She's the first female winner of The Voice, and she just released her second album. And then there's Ray Lynn, who released an EP. So she's the rookie out of the three of them. She's also a contestant on The Voice and has been signed to a major record label and is just starting to carve out her country music career. So you have three very different women who are at different stages of their career in country music, and they're celebrating, all three of them, at the particular stage they're in, which is great.
Well, this reminder, you can catch up with Nikki Strong on Country Hits USA on VOA 1. You can reach her on Twitter at VOA underscore music or on Facebook at VOA Music. Thanks so much, Nikki.
Been listening to International Edition. We invite you to follow us on Twitter anytime you like, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're out there. Our handle at VOA underscore IE. We'd love you to follow us. You can also find us at our website, voanews.com. As always, we'd love to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling, and you for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a fantastic day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a blatant violation of international humanitarian law, self-declared authorities in the separatist-controlled Luhansk region of eastern Ukraine have ordered 10 of 11 international humanitarian aid organizations to cease operations and leave the area within 2 days after the notification. Included among these are a number of United Nations aid agencies, as well as non-governmental humanitarian organizations such as France's Doctors Without Borders, Czech Republic's People in Need, and the International Rescue Committee. Only the International Red Cross will be allowed to resume work, but only after signing an agreement dictated by the separatists. In the wake of Russia's move to illegally annex Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula, Russian-backed separatists staged an uprising in eastern Ukraine, and for the past 17 months have been fighting Ukrainian government forces attempting to dislodge them from the Donbas. As a result, some 8,000 people have since been killed, and well over 2 million have been displaced, about 1.4 million of them internally. According to the United Nations, as many as 5 million Ukrainians are in need of assistance today, particularly now as winter approaches. But as a result of last month's ban, some 3 million of them will not receive the supplies and services they need. A delivery of 16,000 tons of humanitarian assistance is being blocked from those in need. This means that 150,000 people will have to do without their monthly food allotments, while some 30,000 will wait in vain for shelter materials and household items they urgently need. 1.3 million are at risk of losing access to potable water. There will be no essential medicines such as insulin and tuberculosis vaccines, no anesthesia to perform life-saving surgery. The United States calls on the Russia-backed separatists to take immediate steps to improve the lives of the very people they claim to care about most by allowing humanitarian organizations unrestricted access and facilitating the provision of desperately needed assistance now to all those who are suffering, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby in a written statement. Russia and the separatists it backs must fulfill their obligations under the Minsk agreements and allow unimpeded access to all areas of Ukraine by international humanitarian organizations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.